ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Want to get across the big breaking news stories right now? ABC News Top Stories explains the day's biggest stories in under 2 minutes. Search ABC News Top Stories podcast and hit follow or favourite to add us to your playlist.
Donald Trump wanted regime change in Iran and to personally choose who the next leader would be. Iran, of course, rejected that and has elected the son of the former supreme leader to rule. Today, Barbara Slavin, Distinguished Fellow at the Stimson Centre, on what that means for the war. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Barbara, Iran has a new leader and Donald Trump is not happy, is he? It is not who he wants to lead Iran.
Yeah, our supreme leader seems to think he can direct the leadership of other countries. This is not the first time, of course, he has opinions on who should be in charge in various places.
Yes.
But it is extraordinary. He seems to think he can dictate who would succeed the leader of Iran, who was, of course, assassinated along with 40 other people by U.S. and Israeli strikes a week ago.
Donald Trump said he would not last long. What did you make of that?
Well, there's a target on his back. Obviously, the Israelis in particular are going after anyone that they can find who is part of the regime and who's important in it. I'm not sure who exactly Donald Trump had in mind to succeed the supreme leader. He did say that the Israeli strikes apparently were too successful and killed several people that he was interested in. Mm. He's still looking for a Delcy Rodriguez in Iran, someone like the vice president of Venezuela, who he elevated when the U.S. took out the president of that country.
All right, well, let's have a look at who the new supreme leader is and what we know about him. It's Mujtaba Khamenei. He is 56 years old and the son, of course, of the former supreme leader. What else do we know?
Well, we know that he has been obviously very influential for quite a long time. His father was 86, and so Mujtaba was presumably assisting his father in terms of governing Iran. In fact, I wrote a short profile of him in 2019, when he was considered at that time already a possible successor to his father. Mujtaba is rumored to have played a major role in orchestrating the fraudulent re-election of Iran's president Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in 2009 during the Green Movement, and in suppressing the mass protests that followed. Mujtaba is very close to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is the most important military organization in Iran, and also is a very important economic body. As I wrote back in 2019, Mujtaba has the necessary connections with the IRGC and the paramilitary Basij, as well as insight into his father's vast financial resources. So this is someone who doesn't need on-the-job training. He can step right into the role because he was probably already exercising it to some extent before his father was killed.
So what do you think? Will he be more moderate or take a harder line than his father?
Well, we know that his father was killed, his mother was killed, his wife was killed, and one of his children was killed in the Israeli strikes, which is not something that is likely to make him warm and fuzzy when it comes to peace talks or running the country. And I think there's huge dismay in Iran. We just had massive protests against the regime, which were brutally put down back in January. And Mujtaba is someone that Iranians identify with the repressive nature of the regime. And no one has even heard his voice among the public. He's never given a public speech. So this is going to be a difficult choice for the Iranian people to accept.
Interesting. But certainly surrendering would not be on his mind.
No, I don't think that's on the mind of any of the Iranian leaders. They're not about to accept ultimatums I mean, this has been the history of the Islamic Republic. In the 1980s, Iran fought an 8-year war with Iraq. And essentially, in the first year of the war, Iran reclaimed all the territory that had been taken by the Iraqis, but it didn't accept a ceasefire until 1988, when the first supreme leader of the country, Ayatollah Khomeini, was nearing his own death. So this is not a country that bends easily, and certainly not after what is viewed as a completely unprovoked attack by the United States and Israel, while Iran was in the process of negotiating with the United States.
All right, well, Barbara, let's consider now then how the new supreme leader might conduct this war. There have been suggestions before he was appointed that Iran can sustain 6 months of intense war. That was what the regime was saying. Can it do that?
Well, I suppose so, but at an enormous cost. I mean, it is already paid an enormous cost. My sense is that the president of the United States will not be able to sustain a 6-month war. Mm. We've already seen 7 American service members killed, more than 1 million Americans stranded in the Middle East. The State Department is scrambling to try to figure out a way to evacuate them. Just an announcement that our embassy in Saudi Arabia is going to be evacuated, yes, which is very unusual. Price of oil is over $100 a barrel, and the stock market is due to fall precipitously. So I think that the political and economic pressures on the Trump administration will mount. This is, of course, what the Iranians were counting on when they essentially closed the Strait of Hormuz to oil and gas traffic. And I think the pressures will mount on President Trump to declare victory at some point, even if it's not much of a victory.
Well, of course, great pressure coming from Iran when it comes to the Gulf states as well.
Despite pledging to stop, Iran has intensified its retaliatory attacks on its neighbours, hitting Dubai, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait and Bahrain.
The regime is hitting back, launching drones across the Gulf.
Oh my God.
Hitting the world's busiest airport in Dubai. Passengers in the terminal fleeing for safety.
So far, Barbara, those nations being hit by Iranian missiles and drones, they have been just defending themselves. Would there be any point where they change tactic there and actually start attacking Iran, in your view?
I think it's extremely unlikely. I think these countries were very unhappy that the United States and Israel started this war. They tried to convince President Trump to accept a diplomatic deal with Iran, and there was one on the table that the Omanis had helped negotiate, which would have prevented Iran from enriching uranium for 5 years and would have dealt with the issue of about 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium, which is sitting under the rubble of previous U.S. and Israeli strikes in Iran. But Donald Trump decided it was not a good enough deal and that war would somehow get him a better situation. So I think the Gulf states are very, very unhappy and they want this war to end quickly.
Yeah, well, they've asked Australia, of course, for support in a defensive sense. And it looks likely, according to our Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, that we will provide that.
We have been asked for assistance and we will work through that carefully in
This is interesting. Assistance to protect them against Iran's drone and missile attacks?
Correct. And we will work through that in accordance with the position I have outlined, which is we are not participating in offensive action against Iran. Mm.
What does that say about how these nations are actually coping, though? Because, as we said, there's this huge number of drones, of missiles that they're having to fire out of the air.
Yeah, well, there's the question of how many interceptors are available. Iran is perhaps running low on missiles, but it has a seemingly inexhaustible supply of drones, something like 80,000 drones, which are cheap and easily manufactured in small factories that that are hard to detect. And so at some point, it's going to be very difficult for all these countries to continue to intercept these drones. And they've hit high-rise buildings in the Gulf states, fancy hotels. Just imagine what this is doing to the economy of countries that prided themselves on their stability, that encouraged tourism. Mm. Who in his right mind is going to go to a GCC country now?
Yes.
So I think the pain, and this is the Iranian calculation, that Iran can withstand the pain longer than the GCC states can.
All right. Well, Barbara, there's no doubt also, of course, that the bombardment of Iran by Israel and the United States is incredibly intense. Oil facilities have now been hit, and there have been these reports of acid rain falling on Tehran. So how long can the United States and Israel keep up this sort of intensity?
Well, I think they can keep it up for quite a long time. They have pretty much free rein in terms of airspace. Iran does not have good defenses, missile defenses. And so we're seeing increasingly that it's fighter jets and bombers that are going into Iranian territory. So they can keep it up for a long time. But again, to what effect? I mean, a lot of the damage now is being done to essentially civilian infrastructure, or at least dual-use infrastructure. You mentioned the oil refineries. I mean, the pictures coming out of Tehran have been horrific, of the flames and the smoke. And I saw one of these canals that come down from the mountains in North Tehran that are supposed to carry water, and they were aflame with oil, burning oil. So it's dreadful. It's going to have horrible health effects for years to come because of the pollution, the chemicals that have been unleashed by this.
Yeah. And all the while, Donald Trump, he has not ruled out sending in ground troops, has he? He's been asked that repeatedly.
Could there be? Possibly, for very good reason. Have to be very good reason. And I would say if we ever did that, they would be so decimated that they wouldn't be able to fight at the ground level.
Yeah, but that would be so controversial in this country. Mm. I mean, this is not a popular war in the United States. It's very unusual. He started this war with no explanation to the American people beyond a brief video in the middle of the night on Truth Social, his social media app. No speech, no real attempt to justify. I mean, throwing spaghetti against the wall, essentially, with brief interviews in which he would give different rationales for this, not one coherent whole. So he started with this being unpopular, and it's only going to get more unpopular. I was looking at the price of gasoline across the United States, which has gone up 50 cents, 60 cents a gallon. Mm. I mean, he was bragging in his State of the Union speech about low gasoline prices. And, you know, we have elections coming up, midterm elections coming up in November. He is destroying the Republicans' chances for success in these elections at the rate he's going.
All right. Well, just tell me then, Barbara, what do you think? Will the Iranian people rally around this new supreme leader? Will it mean that this idea of regime change will not come about? Does he have enough support that he can keep the regime intact?
The Iranian people will not rally around him. They are dismayed at the choice. But the Iranian people, unfortunately, are not the deciders in this. He needs to keep the allegiance of the men with guns, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And as long as he has the IRGC supporting him, that means that he can stay in power, assuming he survives.
Mm. And in your view, I mean, you think Donald Trump should end this war, even if he just says he's had a victory, and if it ends all of a sudden, what are we left with?
Well, we're left with a broken, angry Iran that will probably be in no mood to make any kind of agreements with the United States, that will be trying to pick up the pieces somehow internally. I suppose this will make the Israelis happy. They will feel that they have degraded Iran's ability to attack Israel for a long time. There will still be the question, though, of the uranium enrichment program, the 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium under the rubble. What will happen to that? Will Iran try to retrieve that and actually try to build a nuclear weapon, which is something it has not tried to do for more than 20 years? I mean, this could boomerang in really dreadful ways. It was an unnecessary war. It was a war of choice. And war is a serious matter. One should not begin something like this with such a poor understanding of what might happen.
Barbara Slavin is a distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center in Washington, D.C. She's researched Iran for three decades. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. And just a reminder that as the podcast apps keep changing, we want you to be following ABC News daily so you don't miss an episode. If you haven't already, please tap the follow or plus button on your podcast app. To get in touch with the team, email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.